This is the 2018 Year in Review
on Texas Public Radio.
The top stories from the TPR newsroom.
Stories that make you think.
Stories that make you say, wow.
Incredible.
The top local stories of the year
from the TPR newsroom
on Texas Public Radio. It starts now.
Thanks for listening. I'm Vince Kong, the digital news editor here at Texas Public Radio. 2018 might be remembered for the blue wave, an alphabet soup of propositions here in San Antonio, and of course, the electric scooter. So we went to the TPR newsroom to help make sense of the year that was. All Things Considered host Steve Short and Morning Edition host Norma Martinez talked to each reporter this past week, and a common theme appeared among many of their stories.
We're the fastest growing major city in the country.
And with growth, there's a need for workers. Another theme this year comes to us from the tech sector, an industry always in need of top talent. However, according to one business owner,
the people that I need don't live here.
Then, of course,
for 2018, this was the story that never ended.
That never-ending story features three propositions, two of which passed. But more on that later. First, bioscience and medicine reporter Bonnie Petrie reminds us that the biggest headlines don't necessarily make for the most memorable stories.
Yeah, this is the kind of story I really like to do because it can contain useful information that can have immediate impact and could save lives.
Steve Short kicks things off, talking to Bonnie about a virus.
Well, Bonnie, in recent years, Zika has become a concern, not just for people who've traveled to tropical destinations, but also for people in South Texas. You did a story this summer on research that's being done here in San Antonio.
Yeah, right. Pretty much the first week I got here to TPR, I heard about some really interesting and potentially consequential research going on at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. And they found that 100% of the marmoset population infected with the virus in the first trimester of their pregnancy. So really early, they miscarried their pregnancies or had stillbirth. Texas Biomed scientist Gene Patterson told me at the time, emerging diseases can have this kind of catastrophic impact on certain parts of the population.
When you have an emerging disease like Zika, you suddenly have a whole population that are exposed to it all at once, instead of a population which you're born, you're exposed to the disease like German measles or Zika, you're running around, you're a toddler, you don't know you're sick. Things are fine. It's when an emerging disease shows up and hits a whole population, including pregnant women, that you'd suddenly discover that there is one part of that population which is more susceptible.
Yeah, this was fascinating stuff. It's like catnip to a health reporter like me, right?
Yeah. Sadly, every year we hear about children who died after being left in a hot car. You reported on ways that that could be prevented.
Yeah. This is the kind of story I really like to do because it can contain useful information that can have immediate impact and could save lives. Now, according to the advocacy organization Kids in Cars, an average of 38 kids die of heat stroke after being trapped or forgotten in cars every year in the United States. Now, I know this can happen to anyone, including me. That's really just how human memory works. So I talked to an expert in human memory at UTSA, Dr. Edward Golub. He said, we forget kids when we've broken our routine, right? He says, the grooves in our memories are so well worn that we do what we normally do. So he suggests creating new grooves in our brain in which you check for your kids every single day, whether you know they're there or not. Then the act of checking becomes a part of that daily routine. Golub told me that's exactly what he does to keep his young kids safe.
I walk all the way around the car and look through the windows and look at them. It's just what I do.
So I was pretty happy about that story, and I really do hope it influenced the habits of some parents with young kids. You know, it's so hard to be a parent to young kids. I've been there, sleep deprived, overscheduled. Any little trick you can use to help keep everything running smoothly and everyone safe is worth trying.
Immigration continues to be a hot-button issue in the United States. It became even more controversial when parents and children who crossed the southern border were being separated. You visited a local organization that's helping some of the migrants.
I did. And this one was a tough one for me as a mom. I went down to Catholic Charities here in San Antonio in July. What I found when I got there kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. There was a mom there. She was about my age, who had just been reunited with her daughter, who was about my daughter's age. and I could not look at them and not see us. This summer, when I got the job here, my daughter and I drove to San Antonio from Los Angeles in a big old budget truck by ourselves, and it wasn't easy. That was everything we had. But those two, Sandra and Crystal, they had faced unimaginable challenges to get to our southern border from Honduras with everything they had, which was nothing. And then they'd been separated. So when the mom, Sandra, told us her story, the mom in me was feeling so much empathy for her.
No se preocupe, mami. Y en tu mí tenga fe, mami. Y este yo sufrí mucho.
It was a privilege in the end, really, to see Sandra and Crystal reunited. It mattered. You know, bearing witness to their story was also a privilege. That's kind of what reporters do most of the time, really, isn't it? We bear witness.
So what stories do you see looking ahead to 2019?
Oh, geez. I hope to continue bearing witness, right, as well as bringing you the stories about all of the exciting medical research and innovation going on in San Antonio. And there is a ton of it to tell you about in the year to come.
Well, thank you, Bonnie.
Now, Norma Martinez sat down with TPR General Assignment reporter Brian Kirkpatrick to talk about his favorite stories of the year.
And joining me right now is a guy who's just about covered it all, TPR's General Assignments reporter Brian Kirkpatrick. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Norma. It's good to be here to talk about this past year, what a year it was.
And one of the biggest stories of the year that you covered was...
I think the biggest story really of the year for the entire city, of course, this is editorial opinion, but I think our rapid growth was the biggest story of the year. And I enjoyed covering stories related to that, how we're the fastest growing major city in the country. We talked to Lorena Pena, the chair of the San Antonio Board of Realtors. She talked about San Antonio's housing boom and why Californians make up the most out-of-staters moving here.
They'll be able to see how much they can get for the money in San Antonio, and still have, again, great employment, activities.
She told us that the most rapid growing part of the county is western Bexar County, generally an area west of Helotes and also west of Alamo Ranch. I happen to live in western Bexar County, and I believe her. It's booming out there. A lot of highway construction and a lot of new home construction.
I'm a resident of the western part of the county as well. Another big story that you covered had to do with the return of a former president to the Alamo City.
That's right, Norma. Former President Bill Clinton spoke at the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center at the NAACP convention. And he said in these divided political times, with border wall talks and children being detained, we need to remember we're more alike than we are different.
When the bonds of our neighbors and the friendships of our oldest allies are being strained, all because we have begun again to think that our differences matter more than our common humanity.
And it wasn't all about politics. Normie also had a little joke there in the end. He told Mayor Nirenberg that he's supporting the local economy during his stop here for that convention by stopping at Mi Tierra with a bunch of buddies and eating lots of enchiladas.
Well, Mi Tierra is a big part of San Antonio history, but you also uncovered a little bit of hidden San Antonio history. You visited the historic Maverick Carter House.
That's right. And a lot of San Antonians, Texans, have heard of Maverick before. You know, the guy that gave the name to basically someone who goes their own way. A descendant of his bought this house. It's now called the historic Maverick Carter House. It's always been a private residence and handed down through that generations of the Mavericks to the Carters. And they announced earlier this year they're now open for downtown tours. And so we decided to pay a visit because it had a lot of cool sounds in it. The house had a 100-year-old pump organ and what they called an annunciator to talk between rooms. Carter Brown, a descendant of the home's namesake, took me on a tour of the home. And here is the sound of that pump organ, and it's just interesting to me to imagine it sounded like this 100 years ago, so it's almost like going back and hearing it with those folks that lived then too.
And so it's not just grown-ups that you like to talk to, correct? You've talked to your share of kids.
Yeah, I sometimes don't think we hear from kids enough. As kids growing up, we all had a common fear about putting our head underwater or swimming underwater. And Texas Public Radio caught up with this little girl, Anika Klein, and her parents over at Delview Swimming Pool near Loop 410 Advanced Jackson. It was part of a story about how the city has 24 public pools, and they're a great place to go and cool off during the hot summer, and a lot of us have forgotten about them or taken them for granted. For example, Fort Worth just has 2 city pools. But anyway, we caught up with Anika Klein, and she told us about how this pool helped her get over that fear.
I like swimming underwater. A long time ago, I didn't used to swim underwater, and now I do.
All right, so Brian, we've put 2018 behind us just about. Is there anything that you're itching to cover here in the coming year?
I think I'd like to keep an eye on, growth in the San Antonio area. So that'll be one thing. And also, the highway construction is everywhere. I'd like to keep an eye on that. 281 at Stone Oak is a huge story. They're going to turn that into a 12-lane highway through there. And while that's greatly needed, I'm sure those folks in Stone Oak are going to suffer quite a bit during that process. No pain, no gain, but I think we'll keep an eye on that, too.
Brian Kirkpatrick is our general assignments reporter here at Texas Public Radio. Thanks for coming in, Brian.
Thank you.
Carson Frame covers issues surrounding the military. Carson and Steve Short began their conversation talking about a special Air Force uniform.
Well, Carson, one of the stories you did was about breastfeeding in the military. How did that come across your radar?
Well, I actually saw some news that the Air Force had approved a breastfeeding shirt that could be worn with the uniform. So it's basically a shirt with panels that peel back for easy access. And that seemed kind of interesting to me. So I started looking into why these shirts were needed. And it turns out that military women have been pushing for breastfeeding accommodations for a long time. So everything from places to privately use a breast pump, to flexibility with work schedules, to milk storage even. And really, the rules for breastfeeding aren't terribly clear-cut across the different military branches, so women were having to rely a lot on each other for information, so things like internet forums and asking female colleagues and things like that.
What were some of the impressions that stayed with you after reporting on this story?
Well, I mean, out of all this, I think I was just really astounded by the determination of some of the new moms out at Lackland. I mean, even with these incredibly demanding, really physical jobs, they were steadfast in making sure they were able to breastfeed and nourish their babies that way. They're working within a pretty challenging system and still functioning at a really high level in their work. And two of them actually stood up a lactation room in their building for others to use once their babies are grown.
Another story you did that's gotten a lot of attention is the MAVNI program. What's that?
MAVNI stands for Military Accessions Vital to the National Interests, and it was basically a way for the Army to bulk up its ranks, to bring in linguists and certain medical professionals. These are skills areas that are tough to recruit and in pretty short supply. So from 2009 until 2016, the DoD brought on non-citizen recruits from all over the world to help fill these gaps. So there were about 10,000 of them. The program was structured to provide a path to citizenship, but over the years, it's been plagued by security questions, and it was even suspended on a few occasions. In the last couple of years, DoD has required increasingly intense background checks, and those often require the work of intelligence assets in other countries. DoD didn't really have the resources to process all of these checks, so this year they started discharging some of the MAVNIs on the basis that they failed the background checks. The MAVNIs weren't really told why or how to plead their cases, and some advocates were saying that the military did it just to clear this backlog of applicants.
You went to the border a couple times this year, in the spring when the National Guard troops were deployed, and then this fall when President Trump deployed active military personnel. What was the most surprising aspect of your trips?
Well, I would say there were two things. The first is just how divided people were about a troop presence. I mean, some were really quick to say, oh, this area is becoming unreasonably militarized, that the Border Patrol are becoming more imposing and aggressive because they're being bolstered by the National Guard and active duty troops. Some folks viewed that as a threat to peaceful existence in their communities, while others felt safer and viewed the military as an added layer of protection in sort of an uncertain climate. So it was very divided. Another thing that surprised me was the perspective of some of the Mexican residents, the people living in Reynosa right across the border. They said that barriers to asylum had created a bubble of Central American migrants in their city, waiting for a chance to cross into the U.S. Violence and fights breaking out and things like that. And they also said that the cartels are basically preying on these desperate migrants and trying to recruit them.
What do you see looking ahead to 2019?
I think the military is going to continue to crop up in conversations around immigration, especially immigration across the southern border. I think we might continue to see the Trump administration very publicly deploy the military and potentially more debates about the legal limits of their activity. I think we'll also see some more hurdles for immigrant recruits who are trying to enter the armed forces. This year, we saw that with the MAVNI program and also with recruits who are green card holders. So in October, the DOD put in place a policy that required more stringent background checks for some green card holding immigrants who wanted to serve. And earlier this month, a judge basically forced the armed services to send these recruits to boot camp, even though their background checks hadn't yet cleared. So I think we're in for future battles here in terms of whether military service should pave the way for expedited citizenship and how that might balance with security concerns.
All right, Carson, a lot of good stuff this year. Thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. In terms of politics, we can't talk about 2018 without discussing the special election and the midterm election. Nora Martinez sat down with Ryan Poppy for more on that.
Here speaking to me right now is TPR's senior political correspondent, Ryan Poppy, to go over some of this year's election news. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, Norma.
Well, Ryan, before we get into the divisiveness of the election and the results, let's talk about sheer numbers. Is it safe to say that more people vote during a presidential election year than a midterm election year this time?
That is typically correct in a normal cycle, yeah.
So what happened in 2018?
Right. So we're talking record level setting numbers just in terms of the people who are registered to vote ahead of the primary and general elections. Sam Taylor with the Texas Secretary of State's office said typically midterm election, you might see about 33% of Texas's voters participate in that election versus a presidential election where there might be upwards of 60% of Texas's electorate who might cast a ballot. So in this last year, we well exceeded past 2016 voting totals, meaning there were a lot more people civically engaged this election cycle.
We've got approximately 1.6 million more people registered to vote this year than we did in 2014.
Why do you think, or in your coverage, what did you see were some of the factors that drove that increased voter participation?
Well, you might have heard about this guy named Beto O'Rourke, who was running against U.S. Senator Ted Cruz.
But I have to say, nobody had heard about him outside of El Paso when he first started running.
True, true. But eventually, he made it to the national stage.
I tweeted out, I want to meet you. And then I heard that that you kind of got attacked for coming here.
Yeah, I mean, try to make anyone happy as you run for office or serve in public office. You can't do it.
And that's O'Rourke appearing on the Ellen DeGeneres show this fall after she viewed a viral video clip of O'Rourke at a town hall event at one of those 254 counties that he visited during his campaign. But O'Rourke's climb in popularity wasn't all steeped in policy discussion. You might remember other moments during the campaign, Norma, that featured O'Rourke shredding through a Whataburger parking lot on a skateboard. Yeah, that pop culture video also went viral. These viral pop moments and how O'Rourke campaigned were able to place O'Rourke within inches of his Republican opponent. And according to political analysts, really put him at the top of the heap in terms of what could be over a dozen Democrats that have hinted at a presidential run in 2020.
So as you mentioned, he is not the only Democrat considering a presidential run.
Absolutely not. In fact, he's not the only Texan considering a run. Perhaps you've also heard of this guy. Yes, I'm speaking of former San Antonio mayor and U.S. HUD secretary for the Obama administration, Julian Castro.
Americans are ready to climb out of this darkness. We're ready to keep our promises. And we're not going to wait. We're going to work. That's why I'm exploring a candidacy for president of the United States in 2020.
Castro announced that he had launched what will probably be a very short-lived exploratory campaign committee and will make a formal announcement of whether or not he's running for president in 2020 on January 12th. Now, Rourke has said he will formally announce his decision on whether he'll run on January 3rd. So it'll be interesting to see what will happen if the two of these actually have to face each other ahead of the 2020 primaries.
So we had a really exciting 2018, and it looks like 2019 is going to be just as exciting. Of course, we're going to find out who is and who isn't running for president. And also we have the legislature coming up. So it's going to be a big 2019.
Yes, it will be. It will be. You will see more of these candidates drop their name. The legislature kicks off on January 8th. We'll see in that first 60 days what the governor deems as important, what he prioritizes. We already know that one of those is going to be property taxes, another school finance reform. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a session it will be with the absence of our own Joe Strauss, Speaker of the House, who is stepping down this year. So, like I said, everything is kind of up in the air of what kind of session it will be and what kind of an election year it'll be as well.
Well, I've been speaking with TPR senior political correspondent Ryan Poppy. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, switching gears. Jack Morgan covers arts and culture for TPR. In his conversation with Steve Short, Jack talks about one of his favorite stories of the year, a story about a mural.
Jack, you did a story on a massive piece of art at the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center called The Story of Civilization. What was that all about?
Gary Sweeney is a San Antonio artist who creates a lot of odd art. And one of the methods he uses is by cutting up old signs, right? So he started out with political signs because they were free, right? You go around, pick them up after the election. But he also goes to places where there are business signs for businesses that have come and gone, and he cuts out individual letters or maybe a phrase from them. And so what he did was to create an entire massive, like 60 by 20 piece of art that was the first paragraph of a book called The Story of Civilization. And it's just arresting. You know, I went out there to take a few pictures of it when I did the story, and people would walk by and they'd kind of glance up and look at it and stop and turn around, and then they'd read the whole thing. It's like, what is this? You know?
You also did a story with a guy who plays music that is sort of a cross between punk and conjunto. It was really interesting.
Yeah, Alvaro del Norte is one of those quintessentially San Antonio characters who's genuine. He loves punk music, which is what he was kind of raised on as a teenager. But also his grandparents and parents and people he's known's favorite, which is conjunto music, old traditional style conjunto music. But he started playing punk music with an accordion. And so you just don't see accordions in punk music, right?
Yeah.
But what made him really... where I had to do the story was the fact that he goes out and does busking on weekend nights in particular and plays old traditional conjunto or rancheras or things that he's heard growing up that people like to hear out on the streets. And so I went out, got there just before midnight and stayed till about 3. And they worked the whole time. They didn't take a break, right?
Yeah.
And it's tough playing to an audience that all they planned on doing was walking by, right? You know, you've got to be a showman. You've got to be good. And you got to get them to stop. And best case scenario, they drop a buck or two into your open case. So he was a real study in contrasts, to be sure.
You also took us back in time out in the hill country. There's a monument in Comfort.
Yeah, you know, there's a... the stories that I like doing most are ones that make me stop and go, oh my gosh, I didn't know about that. Or, yeah, I'd heard about that, but what's the rest of the story? And I've been to... there's something called the Troy Under Union Monument, mm-hmm. and it's in Comfort, and it's... you know, when you start reading it, you go, oh, goodness, It signifies the death of, I think it was 65 recent Americans back in the 1860s. They were imports from Germany, right? Mm-hmm. And they were German-speaking Americans. They came here for American freedom and land and opportunity. And suddenly they were at a place where the Civil War was going to start. And the people around them here in Texas voted to become a part of the Confederacy. And they were like, we didn't come here to be part of the Confederacy. We came here for, you know. So they got together and decided to head to Mexico. There's a lot of speculation as to why they went to Mexico. But whatever the case, they took the time in so doing it. A group of Confederate soldiers apprehended them, and there was a massacre of sorts.
You had a lot of great stories this year. Anything you're eyeing for 2019?
I was told by Sherry Kafka Wagner about three women who were very instrumental in San Antonio history who really don't get much limelight. And I'm really interested in doing this extended piece on three women who really kind of, in their own ways, put San Antonio on the map. That's one of the things I'm looking at doing.
Well, thanks, Jack. Lots of good stuff this year. I'm looking forward to 2019. Thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon.
It was my pleasure.
TPR's technology and entrepreneurship reporter is Paul Flav. He and Norma Martinez sat down to go through the big tech stories of 2018 in San Antonio.
Well, two technology issues you covered this year were scooters and short-term rentals regulations, like on Airbnb. They seem to touch on the same narrative, which is how technology is changing how we live and how cities like San Antonio are having to keep up with those changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Unlike in other industries, technology companies time and time again have shown they're not going to wait for cities to get their blessing. And it may be impacting how quickly the city takes these things on and how they've changed their minds on technology in San Antonio. The perfect example being Uber, Lyft versus scooters. 3 years ago, ride-hailing companies left San Antonio after strict regulations were passed on drivers. The city softened to get them to come back, but this time around with scooters, city leaders couldn't find enough opportunities to use the phrase light touch. The regulations rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, though, especially in areas where scooters were already popular, like King William resident ST Shimmy.
I am constantly being bum-rushed by large dudes riding these scooters at fast speeds. During First Friday on my way home, I ran through at least three or four groups of them. And when I yelled at them to get off the sidewalk, I got flipped the finger and they yelled, yeah, 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 and kind of kept zooming.
And so that was when the scooter count was just over 3,000. It's grown since then. And we know that the city is working on permitting over 12,000 scooters for San Antonio streets. But it seems like those regulations on scooters passed really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they did. Scooter regulations passed in less than 4 months after Bird first dropped them on San Antonio streets without any warning. Compared to short-term rentals, the other technology story of the year, it was Lightspeed. For Airbnb and HomeAway, there was a ton of front-end discussion with the city. The city put together a task force that had both neighborhood residents, hosts, and hotel advocates on it, met, hashed out a document over the course of 8 months. And that was just the beginning. There was another dozen public meetings, council hearings. But short-term regulations had implications for development, zoning, taxing. So in the end, it took 21 months to pass. But unlike scooters, these ordinances are supposed to be permanent, at least until the Texas legislature takes it up. And they have signaled they're going to do that.
We've seen a few setbacks, right? Because it seems like a lot of these tech industries are going just outside of San Antonio to Austin. For example, USAA set up a digital design center in Austin. HEB announced in September that a large technology-based innovation center would open in Austin instead of here in San Antonio, where their headquarters. And many saw that as responding to a tech worker shortage here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a tech worker shortage across the country, and San Antonio's no different. But San Antonio's struggled to gain talent. We consistently rank low on CBRE's top talent markets. HEB's decision, it was not a surprise to some local business owners like Ryan Kelly from Pear Analytics. In an interview with me, he reflected on how difficult it's been for him to hire, including a senior position he tried for months to fill. And here's where he says he got his responses.
In order, it goes from DFW, Houston, I get a few in Austin, I almost get zero in San Antonio.
And that, what does that tell you?
The people that I need don't live here.
But when I ran a recent story related to this, I got feedback that tech workers in the city feel like they can't get a call back from San Antonio companies. So that feeds this idea that there's this mismatch and why the city, county, and nonprofit advocacy organization TechBlock partnered to create this technology recruiting position, the chief talent and recruitment officer, to grab talent and better connect local workers.
So 2019 is right around the corner, and I think this is the sound your coverage is going to revolve around.
Yeah, that's the sound of SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket taking off. We've seen a resurgence of activity at their Brownsville location, which has taken a lot longer to develop than the company first predicted. But CEO Elon Musk continues to predict short hopper test flights of their big Falcon rocket in 2019. It'd be the first time that area was used. So I may be heading back down to Boca Chica Beach this year.
So it looks like we have a lot to look forward to in 2019 as far as tech is concerned. We've been talking with TPR technology and entrepreneurship reporter Paul Flav about the big stories of 2018 and what we can look forward to in the new year. Thanks again for joining us, Paul.
Thanks again.
Camille Phillips covers education for TPR. In her conversation with Steve Shore, she wasted little time in getting to the year's most important issues.
Well, top of my list would be special education. The Department of Education reached a conclusion after several months of investigation this past January. They said that the state's effective cap of 8.5% illegally barred thousands of children from access to special education. Mm-hmm. So in response to that, the Texas Education Agency was required to come up with a corrective action plan. And a major component of that was charging school districts with identifying more kids and making sure they had access to those resources. But I did some reporting on this, and parents still have a lot of distrust about whether or not this action will bring about real change.
You also spent some time analyzing changes to the state academic accountability ratings. What did you find?
Yes, this year the state put in new A through F letter rankings, and those are pretty controversial. Supporters say the system is the fairest ever because of some reconfigurations of how the accountability ratings were calculated. But critics say that even with those reconfigurations, it would still correlate with poverty. And I found that that prediction was true. Most schools that failed the state performance standards serve mostly low-income students. In San Antonio, almost 80% of the schools that failed have a poverty rate of at least 80%. That's what the state identifies as high poverty. But hundreds of schools with high poverty rates scored A's. Most didn't fail. And that's something Education Commissioner Mike Morath pointed out when they released the ratings.
We have proof points that with strong curriculum, with strong instructional support, that all children can achieve. Poverty is not destiny.
The correlation between the accountability ratings and poverty is noteworthy in particular because in the next legislative session, it's likely that the House and Senate will debate including student performance incentives in whatever funding formula they end up with. So they basically want to fund student performance to incentivize better outcomes.
Texas also made national news this year for changes to social studies standards, right? Tell us about that.
Yes, the State Board of Education did two different things with regards to social studies this year. They adopted an approved elective course for Mexican-American studies, specifically to learn about the history of Mexican-Americans in Texas. And then they also revised standards for the social studies standards. These are the required courses that students take. In particular, it changes the way the causes of the Civil War are taught in Texas to put a greater emphasis on the connection between slavery and the Civil War. And I see that as a kind of a overall shift a little bit in the way Texans understand history. It kind of coincides with the trend of school districts renaming schools that were named after Confederate figures. Lee High School in San Antonio, for instance, in Northeast ISD, officially rebranded itself as Legacy for Educational Excellence High School this year. And I did a story on that.
So what story did you enjoy doing the most this year?
I really enjoyed being part of this collaborative project called What My Students Taught Me. We did it in partnership with the Teachers Project out of Columbia University, and then I partnered with the education reporters in Houston and Dallas as well. And I was able to really dive deep into a more personal story about a teacher here in San Antonio named Rebecca Azuna, and a student in particular that really challenged her.
I started to change my thinking of, making sure that she's in compliance with everything that we do in the day, to am I meeting her needs as a child with, a disability? And am I going off of her abilities in our classroom? Am I using her strengths in our classroom?
It was just nice to kind of get a change of pace rather than kind of the hard-hitting stories and do more of a personal, positive story.
All right. So what are some of the stories that you see coming up next year?
School finance reform will be a big one. The next legislative session coming in January is expected to focus on that a lot. And then there's efforts to overhaul the special education system as well. There's a lot of calls for more funding, but then there's also the need to follow through on the corrective action plan.
All right, Camille. Well, thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Sure thing, Steve.
TPR's Joey Palacios covers City Hall. He sat down with Norma Martinez to talk about some of the highlights from this past year.
There have been quite a few, and I think the big one is the charter amendments, Joey. They were proposed by the San Antonio Fire Union, and two of them were successful. Proposition B is going to be put to the test. So, Joey, what's the impact? How do these propositions start, first of all?
Well, Norma, for 2018, this was the story that never ended. It started back in February, and the San Antonio Professional Firefighters Association had announced that it was circulating petitions to amend the charter, and they called it the San Antonio First Campaign. And in an interview with Chris Steele in February, he kind of gave us an idea of why they were starting them and what they wanted to accomplish.
So we had a lot of people reach out recently and say, look, they're not happy with city government. They're not happy that they're not listening to their voice as citizens when it comes to the city manager's pay and bonus, when it comes to the SARS rate increases that they had.
In short, Prop A would have lowered the signature threshold to challenge city ordinances and decisions. Prop B limits how much the city manager can be paid and how long he or she can be with the city. And Prop C creates binding arbitration in negotiation between the city and the fire union. So fast forward to April, and the union succeeded in getting those signatures, about 90,000 in total, close to around 30,000 each, though some of those signature-gathering efforts were called into question.
So we saw two of those amendments pass on election night. Proposition B affects the city manager role. That's the role that Cheryl Scully holds. And Proposition C, that was the binding arbitration amendment for the firefighters. What impact have we already seen since the election?
So Proposition B, as it was written, would not have affected the current city manager because her contract was done years ago and she would have been grandfathered in. Now, and I think it surprised many people that we saw Cheryl Scully announce her retirement at the end of November. This is where we're going to see how much of an impact Proposition B has. The most an incoming city manager now can be paid is around $312,000, and the person who accepts the job can only stay on as city manager for 8 years because of the way that Proposition B is written. As for Prop C, this is where it gets a little bit complex. The fire union has never come to the table in the 4 years it has had a lapse contract with the city over health care and wage negotiations. And so it's been operating under an evergreen clause, and that's a whole nother story.
Well, with all we've seen in 2018, it would almost be unfair for me to ask you what you think is in store for us for 2019 when it comes to San Antonio City Council. I mean, just in the last few weeks, we've seen turnover. As you mentioned, Cheryl Scully announce her retirement next year. And we've also seen William Cruz Shaw, councilman for District 2, announcing he's going to be stepping down from that post. So big picture, 2019, what do you foresee for the city council?
So locally, barring any other big, major, unexpected stories that might come about, one of the biggest talks of 2019 is going to be the mayor's race and the race for city council. So Mayor Nirenberg is running for re-election for his second term, and we'll see who joins that race. It could potentially be Councilman Greg Brockhaus. And if that happens, we could see a very contentious race. In the early part of the year, the city and city council will be looking for the best candidates as city manager. And who will that be? We don't really see any front runners yet, but both Scully and Mayor Nirenberg have hinted the next manager could probably be found without having to look outside of San Antonio. One of the conversations that I had with Scully shortly after she announced retirement was that one of her roles was to create successor leadership within the city. So we could see potentially one of her deputy or assistant city managers coming in to fill the role. And even a couple of weeks ago, Mayor Nirenberg had said that worldwide searches for the next city manager would probably come back right here to San Antonio. So I think that those are hints that the city will be taking a good look inward, which is something that Scully told me that the city didn't do when she was hired back in 2005. So at the beginning of the year, I think that's what we're going to end up seeing is a lot of city manager talk, a lot of presenting potential candidates, and that's going to coincide with people filing for the mayor and council races. So 2019 is definitely going to be another big election year.
Joey Palacios is our City Hall reporter here at Texas Public Radio. Thanks for joining us, Joey.
My pleasure. Thanks, Norma.
And that's our show. For all of these stories and more, visit tpr.org. I'm Vince Kong, and thanks for listening.